ways for you to interact with us on the program, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And if you can't get to a phone, you could also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. So rookie minicamp will be getting underway on Friday and will continue through Saturday. We'll delve into some of the storylines out of that. We'll also continue to break down the rookie class that the Giants just welcomed in. And there's a few interesting articles up on Giants.com. Dan Salamone, one of our featured writers, wrote a few breakdowns in terms of some of the players who have already played in the NFL that are in comparison to the rookie class, as well as some of the undrafted notable free agents that have made a name for themselves during the course of Tom Coughlin's era. So we'll get into a lot of those topics, plus your phone calls the rest of the way. Paul, how are we doing?
Hey, I tell you what, Lance, I'm really looking forward to seeing these kids because, you know, all we've done now for months and months and months are talk about, hey, this guy would be a good fit. This guy maybe won't be. This is what the Giants need. What do you think if they get this guy? Well, guess what? It's finally over. We finally know who the Giants are going to have on their roster, and it's time to see them up close and personal. And look, how many times have I told you and Anita and John, believe what you see, to steal a phrase from Montrell Roll. We can talk all we want about guys. We can read all we want about guys. We can even look at as much video clip, which I do, about guys. But now it's time. It is time beginning on Friday when at rookie minicamp they hold their first practice session of the year. We actually get to see these guys' eyewitness account firsthand. And it isn't shirts and shorts, don't get me wrong. You know, it's not going to be, it's shells probably. All right, I'm sure they're not going to have the full gear on. I don't think the CBA allows for that. I'm pretty sure it's going to be, because we didn't have a rookie minicamp last year. So I'm forgetting right now exactly what we're going to be seeing. I'm not sure what the new CBA does have into it for the last couple of years. But we're actually going to get to see these guys. Now, I will tell you this. There was one guy I would like to mention and bring up now before we do anything else on the program, because you folks will remember, if you were tuned into the program John and I did on Saturday, it was the third day of the draft, and the Giants took a safety out of Texas named Michael Thompson, and we couldn't find him on Giants on NFL.com. We couldn't find anything on our respective scouting books on the player, and consequently, we were really at a loss for words because neither of us wanted to say anything about a player we had not seen, read about, or talked about yet. I mean, it would be unfair to the player to characterize him as anything other than we knew his height, his weight, and his school.
And his name, too.
And his name. That we knew.
Let's not forget about that.
That we knew.
Yeah.
That's all we knew. So, anyway, we looked at the Texas bio, as you may recall, as we were doing the show. We read a couple of things off the bio, but that's basically stat and biographical stuff. It's not anything about the player. Well, subsequent to that, I have acquired some cut-up footage on this player, and I have looked at him, and I have studied him. You will find, folks, he is incredibly quick, incredibly fast. He's lean. He's long. He tackles, as opposed to many defensive backs who just want to hit, cut somebody at their legs, or push them over. Not so with Thompson. Thompson tackles, which I find to be a rare commodity among a lot of defensive backs in today's game.
But something you need to be a member of the secondary.
You'd like to believe so.
Yes.
So what I'm saying to you is, despite not knowing anything about the guy coming in, I have done some research, and what I have found is that perhaps he should have been on some of these boards, because he's got the quickness, he's got the length, he's got the frame, he looks like he's got the desire, because you don't tackle with the technique that he tackles with unless you want to. That's part of the problem with defensive backs who don't tackle well. They don't want to. It's something you've got to learn, and you've got to want to do it. So these are all good things that I saw. Now, is he great in man-to-man coverage? I can't tell you that. What I do know is he played some slot corner when he was at Texas. The stuff that I saw, he was playing safety. I did not see him play the slot. I did not see him play outside wide at corner, which apparently he did some snaps doing that too. But the stuff that I saw at safety, I have to tell you, I'm a little bit surprised, based on just the cut-ups, that this guy was there in the fifth round. Now, again, I saw some cut-ups. I didn't see full game action. I didn't see 3 years worth of stuff because he's a 3-year starter. What I saw was 5 minutes worth of cut-ups. Instinctively, it looks pretty good. So I am very curious to get him out here on the field and to see what he does once he arrives at the Giants complex. And I only say this. I don't want to put any pressure on him. But what I want to do say is I think there's some optimism. It does sound to me, or should I say it looks to me, like it is a better pick than some people might have thought when they were originally shocked because his name came out of nowhere. And I might add, Devon Kennard was a fifth-round pick.
Correct. Yeah.
Who most people didn't think when he first got here was going to project as a full-time starter, but you saw it right away. As soon as he got here to camp and you watched him practice, you said, uh-oh, this guy's for real. I offer that to you right up top.
Well, the Giants have a good track record with those unknown commodities or late-round picks. We talk about undrafted free agents. If I recall, a guy named Ahmad Bradshaw was a late-round pick as
seventh
well.
Rounder.
So there you go. They certainly have found some gems out there in the late rounds, and you need to do that because we talk about the importance of the draft from a salary cap perspective, the flexibility that can bring to the table when you get quality, productive players who are not necessarily eating up so much of your cap. The opportunity is there, too. You threw out the optimism. The opportunity is there for Thompson, too, Paul. Now that you have two young safeties in addition to Burhe and Taylor, and let's not forget about Gordy, too. I mean, these five guys who are going to come in and compete, unless there's a corner that's going to convert, they're all going to have a legitimate chance to snag a starting job entering training camp.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And again, I only bring him up because he's the one guy, I think, of the Giants' six draft picks that very few people knew anything about. There wasn't a lot of material out there on him. And so, I made a specific, in fact, I'm not going to lie to you, I went and got some research on all three of the lower draft picks. But Thompson's the one.
Not surprised by that.
Well, got to.
Of course.
I don't want to be blind when they come in here. So, but Thompson is the guy of the three that I thought was the most mysterious. So I wanted to share that stuff with you because that's what I saw. And again, believe what you see. I think there's optimism.
In terms of his numbers, and there's only so much you can read into Thompson's numbers, but he played in 52 career games. You mentioned he did start 31 in the final three seasons, including all 13 games last season. He had 213 tackles, including 69 in 2014. So, you know, as you touched on, Paul, the tackling aspect, I think the numbers support that, and I would say the film backs that up as well.
Yeah, it really does. You know, one of the things that disappoints me a lot about cornerbacks as they're coming out in recent years, and safeties both, is that because I don't know if it's because they're afraid to get hurt. I don't know if it's because tight ends and wide receivers and running backs are bigger, faster, stronger, and you know, it's just a load to bring some of these guys down. I don't know why it is, but it seems to me that in the last many, many years now, defensive backs are shying away from becoming tacklers. They want to elbow a guy, and they want to shoulder a guy, and they want to just cut his legs out, and they want to push him out of bounds. I don't see a lot of guys who literally want to wrap up and tackle somebody in the secondary. I'm not talking about the front seven. Secondary guys seem to have shied away from that. And I mean, is it just because of the nature of the way the game is being played and the physicality of it? Is it because in college they're not teaching it as much? Because remember, these NCAA coaches are in it to win games at that level. They're not necessarily in it to be a farm system for the NFL. Now, we know that's kind of what they turn out to be, but that's not their priority. That's not their goal. It's not like we're going to teach you to be a great tackler so when you get to the NFL, you're going to be able to do this. That's not what they're doing. They're saying, just get the guy down any way you can. We want to win. And that's it.
Well, I also wonder, with the rule changes, how much of an impact that has in terms of the art of tackling that you're touching on. Because, you know, now when you're a defensive player, specifically a secondary player, Paul, and you're coming towards the offensive player, do I go low? Do I go high? Do I wrap him up? I mean, think about the decision-making that has to go through the mind of the defensive player, specifically in the backside, in how they approach their tackle.
All the more reason that if you're taught to tackle properly earlier in your career, you won't have to think about it.
You should pick up good habits.
You pick up good habits. You know what to do instinctively. It's like, there's the guy with the ball. He makes the catch. Boom, this is what I do. I mean, I really believe, Lance, that the deterioration of tackling in the secondary, not only does it lead to a lot more big plays and you get a lot of guys who just aren't getting the job done back there like they should or as well as they should, but I also believe then you get more of those indecisions, more of those injuries, penalties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's sloppy. It's not good for the game. So anyway, folks, bigger picture is we're talking DBs and hitting. Smaller picture is I think Thompson actually has a little more value than maybe some of the draft nicks had thought when they decided not to include him in their lists.
Which could be big things for the Giants. We're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. So two ways for you to interact with us on this program. Let's get things started, and we start off with Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Well, Marco, what's happening?
I'm doing well, thanks. I just got calling up after the draft and a few different points that I wanted to make and also a couple questions for you both. I'm trying to get the roster here up because this will help me make my point. But what I noticed about the draft, especially after especially starting with Collins, Landon Collins, the attention on special teams that was made by the team with in free agency and then in the draft. You know, Collins, 00, I know the fifth and the sixth round pick, the receiver, and Michael Thompson, they're all supposed to be helping out on special teams. And then also, obviously, Dwayne Harris. You know, I think the special teams has really, really improved, and I'm excited about that group.
Well, Marco, I'd also throw in Jonathan Casillas, too, who was a special team player as well. So, yes, I think you bring up a good point in terms of across the board, Paul. There's a number of players that are going to come in and not chip in their respective positions, but also have at least special teams on their resume.
No question.
Yeah. When you're talking about guys that could come down, and a few different guys that are willing to play gunner, I mean, that's a great sign.
Yeah.
Michael Thompson, the fifth-round pick, you know, was a surprise. And then after looking into it a little bit, I heard that he was, if he stayed at Texas, and actually, backtrack, Charlie Strong, the Texas coach, came in. It was his first year from Louisville. And the reports were that they were high on Thompson, but they would feel much, much better if he was with Strong maybe one more year. They think maybe Charlie Strong got his hands on him a year too late. So it sounds like this guy's football is really his best football is ahead of him. So we may have gotten a nice little gem there going forward.
You know, I wonder if Thompson, and again, I bring up Kennard's name because I wonder if Thompson maybe fits a little bit into that mold of a guy who played a lot of different roles in college because they needed him to, and that, in fact, may have hindered his development or hindered his grade because he could not focus on the one position where he's best suited.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
It's certainly possible.
Yeah, and you know they'll come in and they'll like they did with Weston Richburg, they'll give him a position or two to really concentrate on, and you know maybe a year, 2 years away, he'll really start to make an impact. Do you, Paul and Lance? Do you think Burhe and Collins can play together as safeties? They seem very similar.
Well, I do believe that Collins is more of a strong safety and Burhe is also more of a strong safety. But remember, with Spagnuolo, they'll play left and right safeties, not so much your typical free and strong. With Spagnuolo's system, your left and right safety will flip-flop, and they will also flop in terms of who's coming down and who's going back.
Yeah.
So to be honest with you, yes, I suspect, without seeing Collins actually here and running through practice plays, I suspect that they could play together. And that's why I've been telling people, the Giants have two starting safety spots that have to be won. I'm not interested in just saying, okay, this guy's going to be the left, or this guy's going to be the right, or this guy's going to be the strong, and he's staying there, and there's no room. Now, I did say going into the draft, you had to be careful about guys who clearly were more suited to strong safety and guys who were more suited to free. It's like, do you want to just stock up on all strongs? Or stock up on freeze. You know, you do have to keep that in mind. At the same time, who's to say maybe that Collins isn't the old-term strong safety, and maybe Burhe winds up being the old-term free safety?
Sure.
I mean, again, I want to stress, Spags plays left and right. It's not the traditional type of free and strong that most people are used to. So my answer to you is yes. I think anything's possible. I think any of the safeties on the Giants roster right now could be starting next to one another, and we're just not going to call them anything but safeties.
And interesting.
Marco, to add to that, I'm sure during the course of camp, Spags and company, they're going to do everything they can to make sure that all of the safeties know both the left and the right
no
side.
No question.
They're not going to categorize each and every one of them. Plus, on top of that, at least from the peripheral here, the Giants envision Collins as being an all-around safety. They would not classify him, at least entering camp, as just a strong safety, even though many people out there would classify
him. Can I say something? If Landon Collins is as incredibly smart and brilliant on the football field as we've been told he was at Alabama when he knew everybody's position on the field, if that's true, not only should he be able to play both, Landon Collins, maybe in the sub-package, winds up being the third safety. Maybe they move him out of the traditional safety package. He winds up coming down as the sub-linebacker in effect.
Right.
Okay, and maybe one of these other guys winds up playing center field and going back there with Burry as the safeties. Collins might wind up being the third safety in that package. I certainly think he's got the ability to do it.
He's strong in the box. It would make sense.
Interesting. And one last question. Brent Jones, the Canadian, he came over from the Canadian League, has been brought over. And I know there was reports, but the Giants didn't officially announce what players are going to be part of the tryout. I saw some Canadian players that are linked to the Giants that are supposed to be coming over tomorrow and in these tryouts. So can you guys share, has something changed? Because I've also seen this around the NFL. Why are Canadian players getting more of a look now? Has something changed within the organization where scouts now are also tending to the CFL more so than past years?
No, it's all about just trying to find the best players possible. And you know what? Occasionally, if there's a guy from Canada who just really sticks out and you say, look, I like this guy, you're going to try to give him a tryout. I mean, seriously, I don't think there's any GM or any scout in this entire league that's going to turn away an opportunity to look at a good player. And I don't care where he's from.
Yeah. Plus, Marco, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. The other thing, a number of players that go to play in the CFL, Paul, played collegiately here in the U.S.
A number of them did.
They understand what the NFL game is all about. That's why I don't really think it's a huge risk if you go out there in terms of experimentation.
Although Jones, the all-CFL center they brought down, was a Canadian all the way through and through, so he will have an adjustment to make. But, you know, here's the thing. Okay, with the competition for players at an all-time high, everybody has access to the internet. Everybody has access to digital video. Everybody has access to social media where, you know, there are more players known about today than they clearly were 30 years ago. I remember, you know, guys, you got to love it. Wellington Mara, God rest his soul, used to sit at his desk at the Giants headquarters, and he would thumb through the college football preview magazines. And that's a lot of the times how he would start identifying players that he might be interested in the draft. I mean, it was that primitive. Now, with all the video and the computerization and everything else that's out there, I mean, it's really hard. It's really, really hard to be hidden. If you have any talent at all, somebody's going to find you somehow, some way. It's hard to kind of really go unnoticed in today's world. And, you know, if that means that more guys from Canada are going to get workouts, then that's what it means.
You got to do your due diligence. Real quickly, before we get back to the phone, speaking of those magazines that you referenced that Wellington Mara worked with, they featured that on the Finding Giants piece.
Yes.
On NFL Network. And if you go back and look at those magazines, they still have the written notes on the side in between the pages because he was so thorough in doing his homework.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Doug Murphy, who's the Giants archivist here among his many jobs with the organization, has put one of those on display, I think, at the Legacy Club.
I believe you're right.
Over at MetLife Stadium. And if you ever get a chance a couple hours before the game to do the tour of the Legacy Club, it's almost like what the Yankees have with Monument Park. It's like a little Giants Hall of Fame, and they got so much cool stuff in there, you know, from the Giants history. We all know this franchise has a lot of it. I'm pretty sure one of those magazines is in there. And it's amazing to think how far we've come in terms of scouting players. I mean, from looking through the magazine and getting tips that way to now being able to click a couple of buttons and you're popping up digital video.
And the clay version of Paul Dottino will be inducted into the Legacy Club at a date later to be named. We haven't yet solidified that, but there will be a whole ceremony considering he is part of the Archives.
Yeah, but I
got to
retire first, and I don't think that's ever going
to
happen.
That, since that's never going to happen, it's more of a reason why we need to get this going here. You know, time is of the essence, as they say. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mike is in Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. This is a question for another Fordham Universitas alumni, and I think that's Paul, if I'm correct.
Yes, sir.
My question has to do with Justin Pugh. Only seen a few games down here each year. I wonder whether or not he actually has the strength, the temperament, and the technical ability to move over to play guard. I watched his films, and I don't like his footwork.
Okay, actually, he's got a lot of athleticism in his lower body, and it's always been believed by the people who originally scouted him at Syracuse that he would be a better guard than a tackle. So that I give you right off the top. As far as his power and strength, he does need to get stronger, and he's been working out here a lot during the offseason. We've seen him. He is absolutely trying to work on that. And I know for a fact he's much broader and thicker in the upper body than he was last season. I don't know what his weight is right now, but I do see a change in terms of some of the bulk and size up top. Very, very important for him as he makes the conversion. And again, it's unofficial. No one has said he's going to convert. We're just assuming that right now, and he himself has said he'd be willing to do it. The other thing you want to keep in mind about him, he is a very smart, intelligent player. So in terms of the technical aspect of making the change, should not be an issue for him. He's very astute. He's eager. He's willing to learn. Technically, all they got to do is kind of show him. And Flats is real good at that. And I have no real questions that Pugh's going to be able to pick it up well. Now, you are right. He's not your typical 330-pound, mauling kind of bulldozing anchor kind of guard that a lot of teams use. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing about the Giants. That's not the style that they use. They use a little bit of that zone blocking stuff where they love to pull their guards out around the edge. You know what I'm saying? They'll run the counters. They'll run the stuff outside to where they would like their guards to be more athletic than they would to just be big blob anchor kind of guys.
And he fits that mold, Pugh.
He does. So, yes, the answer emphatically across the board, the Giants are going to be better in two spots because of Flowers at right tackle and Pugh probably at left guard.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Mike. Appreciate the phone call, and that is speculation at this point. But in order to work Flowers in, we're under the assumption somebody's got to move around.
And Flowers is a tackle.
A different spot. Correct.
Clearly.
Exactly.
They made that very, very clear.
So if you were then penciling in Beattie and Flowers, Pugh being at right tackle last season, the assumption is they'd have to find another spot.
Well,
for
remember the motto, the best five play. And Pugh's one of the best five.
Absolutely. And on top of that, the Giants also, when they bring in young guys, not Flowers, but Pugh is still relatively young. It's not like he's been in the league for 5 years. The goal is to make them learn a variety of different positions. Case in point, Richburg comes in last year, Paul. They didn't automatically throw him in at center. Yeah, J.D. Walton. He got reps at guard as well during the course of camp. It wouldn't surprise me if, even before they solidify the five offensive linemen this season, during the course of minicamp and camp, you're going to see guys play a little bit out of position, perhaps.
Let's make something very clear, all right? The Giants may or may not, we'll leave it out there, have won the Super Bowls they won without a guy like David Deal, who was able to move around and play all the different positions on the line, without a guy like Kevin Booth, by the way, who just got cut by the Raiders, who gave them a number of snaps over the course of that second championship at guard and at center because it was necessary with guys getting banged up. You got to have those kinds of guys.
And there's no reason why Pugh can't be very well the next guy, even though he has, for the most part, played right tackle since he came here to the Giants. Let's head back to the phone lines. So glad you could join us on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Cody is in North Carolina. Cody, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
What's up, fellas? I called a few months back, like a couple months back, and it was you guys, Paulie D and Lance. Yeah, I was on the show when I called. And I was saying that the organization and Reese knows exactly what he's doing. And I also made a prediction on the bracket. What I wanted to say, though, is I get a different feeling. I have a good vibe from this whole off season, from the top, Samara, all the way down to the, you know, I feel like everything is more precise and more, you know, you could, I don't know, I just get a sense that this is going to be a great season, because all the moves, as far as free agency, as far as, you know, our draft picks, as far as even Brett Jones and going to Canada and getting him, you know, and getting Thompson. Like, I feel like we have a chance this season. We have a chance to. Everybody has something to prove. Everybody has something to prove, and I like that feeling. I feel like we got a good core group of guys and young talent. We're gonna be all right. I like this season.
I think I understand your vibe, and Lance, please, if you disagree, just say it. But I get a very strong sense of urgency, of energy, of determination.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
what I'm sensing from top to bottom, from John Mara himself, and even from his mom, God rest her soul, before she passed, is that
yes.
enough is enough. This team is going to make the playoffs, and we'll will this team to get into the playoffs if we have to. And there's nothing that we will not do to make it. You know, not that they ever don't try, because this team has always been built about putting a winning product on the field. It hasn't always worked out, but
exactly.
they've always tried. The goal and the efforts have always been the same, but I do sense an extra kind of determination about enough is enough. Haven't been to the playoffs
exactly.
in a couple of years, and that's got to stop now. I do sense that extra energy. They're feeding it off of me.
Well, they're not trying too hard to feed that off
of you. I feel that too. See, like even with the free agents and the players that they added to the team during free agency and the draft, if each player, I did a little bit of research, you know, but each player has something to prove. You know what I'm saying? Even Harris coming from, you know, he was a gunner at our rival. You know, he got something to prove. Like it's just like all the players, even the rookies. You got Landon Collins, which I feel like people was underreading this guy. Landon Collins, I was looking at him. He's quicker than what people say he is. He's smart. He's definitely smart on the field. And he played for Saban. Like you can't lose with that. I feel like everybody has something to prove. Being that he went in the second round, he's a first round draft pick. He has something to prove. The safety Thomas that we got that nobody knows about.
Cody, I would agree with you. I think there's a general theme across the board where there's motivation there. And certainly appreciate the phone call.
That's what we need.
Correct. And I think that element is there. And, you know, emphasizing what Paul just brought up, as well as the last caller, I sense there are a number of individuals on this team, Paul, that see opportunity. Maybe it wasn't there before. Nat Burhe, for example, I think he senses second year, I have a legitimate shot to be a starting safety in the National Football League. He's pumped. I see that. We were talking about the offensive line earlier in the program. Jeff Schwartz and Justin Pugh, who both spoke to the media the other week when they had their voluntary workouts, both, without being asked, said, I am willing to change positions for whatever is good for the betterment of the team.
Yeah.
Whether it be tackle, whether it be guard, whether it be left side, whether it be right side. You know, Rashad Jennings is always a positive player, but, you know, he's also amped up to show that he can be fully healthy for an entire season.
Stick with the line. Richburg's pumped because he's getting to
go
back to center, which
there
is where he belongs.
Good point. So that's a third element to the offensive line, who also is open to playing just about any position. Not that anybody thinks he's not going to be at center, but who knows? Competition could present different variables. But I do get that feel, and it's very early, and they've barely been on the football field. But, you know, the old saying is talk is cheap, show me on the field. So I want to put things in perspective. But from talk alone, you feel that intensity. And you don't get that feel, Paul, very often this early in the offseason.
Yeah, I think they are really anxious to get out there, and that's one of the reasons why rookie minicamp for me coming up on Friday is a big deal, because it's actually a chance to finally see some of these guys out there on the gridiron.
Let's head to Twitter, and we'll get back to your phone calls momentarily here. I know a number of you weighing in on a variety of different topics related to the roster, the rookie class. We're really going to jump all around during the course of the remainder of this program. Joe Henderson at Jendy underscore Hendy. Do you expect having a variety of physical safeties will increase Spags' use of the safety blitzes he called before?
Spags loves the safety blitz as a secret weapon, basically to cause a lot of confusion for opposing offenses. But what is the number one key to a safety blitz? You know what it is. It's not physicality. Speed. You've got to have safeties who are fast enough and quick enough to get there, because if you send a safety on a safety blitz, whether it's in one of the gaps or off the edge, and he's not quick enough there to make an impact on the play, you've left yourself naked in the secondary, and you pay for it. That's one of the reasons why Jabril Wilson was so valuable to this team, because his quickness and athleticism allowed him to go on the safety blitz, to create pressure, to create troubles for the quarterback, and he was good enough to make it happen. You know, if he was a step slow, guess what? You got problems back there. So that's the number one key. And it looks like to me, okay, Thompson certainly has that speed and quickness based on what I saw on tape. I'm anxious to see him in person. Burhe, more of a straight ahead in the box kind of guy. I don't know how much he blitzed in school, because when I saw his tape when he came out, he wasn't much of a blitzer.
But they did use him sometimes.
They used him in the box, but not necessarily a blitzer. He was more of a run gap stuffer, not coming in for the quarterback. Cooper Taylor was a guy I saw do a lot of blitzing when I saw the tape before he came out in the draft. So, again, interesting dynamic. I didn't see Landon Collins in my cutups do a lot of blitzing to get after the quarterback. What I did see was they used him a lot on run blitzes to stuff gaps, but not necessarily, you know, the pressure to QB. So speed, though, is the number one requirement for a safety to be able to execute a blitz.
Well, let's put it in this way. If Alabama used him in a variety of different positions, clearly there's an element of versatility, at least, in his game.
Without a doubt.
Because they wouldn't have had faith in putting him in the slot, throwing him back in coverage, and bringing him up to the box.
I'll say this. Steve Spagnuolo, I know enough about him. He is really, really good at what he does. And really good at identifying what players do well. And also really good at finding out ways to mix things up within the scope of what they do well. And so I'll be honest. When John said to me the other day, well, remember the first couple of games when he was here the first time and it didn't look so good. They gave up 40 points a game, 400-something yards a game the first 2 weeks, and then it all changed. How long is it going to take for Spags to get his defense into gear this season? I don't know the answer to that. But what I will tell you is, once it gets going, I think you folks are going to be very happy with what you see.
Let's head back to Twitter, and we will be getting back to your phone calls. Just want to work in some of the social media aspects of the program. Ben, who chips in a lot on this program, says, Antrel Roll still having an impact on the Giants. Giants drafted a lot of players with a lot of dog in them. I like it. And that gets back to the attitude that we were talking about. Now, we haven't heard much from the rookies. Landon Collins, though, seems to have that chip on his shoulder, given the fact that he wants to quiet the skeptics and the teams that passed over him. But I would even go to say there are current veterans on this roster that have that Antrel Roll dog, if we were to use Ben's term, in them. And you need that type of, that inner desire.
Well, for one, if Beeson can stay on the field, that's going to go a long way in terms of providing leadership and some of that enthusiasm and some of that dog on the field if he's able to do so. The jury's out on that. Folks, you know what the track record is with John Beeson. He's had a lot of injuries. I don't know how many games he's going to play this year, but I know if the Giants are fortunate enough to get 14, 15, or 16 out of him, that will really help out a lot of these younger players a lot.
By the way, you were saying how the players could feed off of your intensity. Ben chips in, says people in North Dakota can feed off of your energy. So I think that has been well documented for the most part. Let's head back to the phone lines here on this Wednesday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, talking about various aspects of the Giants roster, the incoming rookie class getting you set for rookie minicamp, which gets underway on Friday. Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hello, Paul. How's everything going?
Hi.
Doing well, Dre. What do you got for us?
I have a quick question. I see, like, we're stockpiling offensive linemen, and I know through history, the recent history, It seems like we're stockpiling that position in case of injury. Do you know, you know, what's your take on how many offensive linemen, how many defensive linemen are we going to take into the 53?
Well, Lance, I'm going to let you start with the O-line. I'll go D-line. How about that?
Well, I don't know. Was your question, Dre, did you have a slip of the tongue with the O-line, or you're just referring to the defensive line?
Both.
Both. Okay, I wasn't sure. I thought he was just referring to the defensive line. In terms of the offensive line, I could see them keeping, I would say, about 9 to 10 offensive linemen when it's all said and done, in terms of giving you a number. And I think that could very well change depending on if somebody wows them during the course of training camp.
Yeah, you know, to me, 9's the max. I don't think you can go 10 because I'm going to tell you right now, I'm looking at 10 potential keepers on the defensive line.
There's a lot of depth there.
And you usually only want to go with 9. And, you know, I don't see how you can. I mean, think about this for just one second about the Giants' defensive line. And they're going to have to steal a position from somewhere else, whether it's they go with 3 safeties, they go with 5 linebackers. They're going to have to steal a position because let's start with the defensive ends. JPP, DeMontre Moore, Ayers, Selvey, Wynn, and, of course, Double O. That's 6 defensive ends, and I don't think you can make a case for cutting any one of those guys, okay? Now you go inside, and what do you have there? You got Bromley. You got Cullen Jenkins. You got Jonathan Hankins.
Ellis.
You got Kendrick Ellis you just signed. That's 4 more right there, and that's without even talking about any of the other guys who were around. Marcus Kuhn, who had playing time last year, and, you know, they were still hoping he was going to give them some more ups. I mean, I've already given you 10 solids, and there's even more to go. So,
I brought up the breakdown from 2014. So they kept 10 for the offensive line. They had 5 defensive tackles, 5 defensive ends. So they had 10 of each in terms of the defensive line and the offensive line as they made that 53-man roster heading into last season, just to at least put things in perspective.
Yeah, but usually, right. Usually you're going to go with 9 offensive linemen. They had to go with 10 because they were so crippled. Their offensive line is just a mess.
Hurt right in preseason.
Coming right out of training camp. You know, they had guys hurt, and they also didn't know what John Jerry was going to give them because, remember, they signed him in the offseason. He had a knee. So they had to keep an extra offensive lineman. You really would rather go, I think, with 9. But defensive line-wise, I think you got to go 10. I don't see how you can.
And, Dre, we'll let you continue, and I'm putting your words together here to make an assumption, but if the concern is, because you talked about how they tend to stockpile up on defensive linemen per se, and, well, what's the point of doing that if you can't keep everybody? But remember, the goal is competition in camp. That is priority number one. Make guys push each other.
Yeah.
And I think they have the bodies to do that this offseason.
I agree. And that's why his feet out kind of picked up on my conundrum. With you're looking at what you have right in front of you. Competition is great. And if everyone pushes each other to the same level or surpass it, the hard part is cutting them down to 9 or, because it seemed like when I'm looking at the other teams, you know, they have the same competition and they're going to have to make those hard decisions also. And knowing the Giants, if we had someone on another team we had an eye on the offensive defensive line that could be an asset to the team, you know, I don't see them hesitating to bring them into camp to raise the level of competition.
The best thing that could happen for the Giants along that defensive line is that Odighizuwa and Kerry Wynn, 2 young defensive ends, push DeMontre Moore right over the edge and make him the monster that he was supposed to be when he came out of college. Because DeMontre Moore was a beast in college, an absolute beast. He has double-digit sack skills, and it hasn't shown in the first 2 years of his career. Well, it's time now. It is time for DeMontre Moore to blossom and become that ferocious pass rusher that we all know he can be. And part of that is going to be the mentality that he brings to the table every single practice. And if guys like Wynn and Double O can bring that mentality as young, hungry players, they can push him into being a better player. And that makes the Giants better across the board.
And, Dre, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. I'll give you another example. Israel Adonijay, remember, Paul, he was signed the early August last season. So just because they have X amount of guys now, piggybacking off of the point that Dre made, for all we know, as we get into the heart of camp, they're going to be looking and eyeing for other defensive linemen potentially.
You know, funny thing about Adonijay, had a good preseason.
Very
he
good.
Got better each week during the preseason, and when he was in the final cut, I was surprised. I had him making this team.
So did I.
And Kerry Wynn, who didn't do very much during the preseason, limited snaps, he wound up sticking. Well, you know why? Because the Giants saw a lot of upside in Kerry Wynn, and they understood Adonijay, look, he's been around a while. You know, he's an established vet. But Kerry Wynn's got big-time ups, and they saw enough in the very limited action that he had to believe that he deserved a spot. And I think we saw in December, Kerry Wynn does deserve to be in the NFL.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Moving along, Mike is in Dumont. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, P-Dot, how's everything going?
Hi.
Doing well, Mike. What's happening with you?
Not much. Two quick points on this, on what Paul touched on at the beginning of the show. Is it Michael Thompson? How do you pronounce his first name, first of all?
You know, I'm waiting to see him because no matter how many times you hear an SID or a coach or a PR guy tell you what the guy's name is, until you hear it from him directly, you're liable to hear three different versions. And I know Lance knows that because he and I both do college games all the time. I'm going to wait till I hear it from him.
I have heard multiple versions based on the pronunciation breakdown. I personally would go with Michael as
Michael.
Opposed to Michael because I'll give you the phonetic. It's M-Y-K-E-L-L. I break that down as Michael.
That's out of the Texas
Correct.
Guide, so
exactly.
That's the best we have to go with right now. But, again, I've had college SIDs yeah. tell me one thing, and then the player tell me another.
Well, and here's the other thing, and we'll let you continue, Mike. We don't mean to get off
I'm
topic.
I'm sorry, but you asked.
But there are a lot of SIDs, not to kill that part of the business, who don't necessarily know how to break down phonetics very well. So that also at least spices things up. But anyway, Mike, continue.
And I also saw it spelled with two K's in there, so I'm at a loss. In the meantime, we'll just say Michael. You know, I was thrilled with our first three picks, as I think a majority of the fans were. And then, and speaking with friends and other fans, you know, they kind of got a little bit of a head scratcher, and you know, with the fifth. And I'm not really disappointed. Especially after Paul's dissertation in the beginning about all his you know, tangibles. You know, and obviously we need depth at safety. I think my disappointment was kind of where I just think based on all the prognostication and all the people talking about, you know, looking through their pages and not seeing this kid at five, even you guys kind of touched on that, you know, in hindsight, now, Paul, you look at the cut-ups and you see he's got, you know, good feet, and he's got great size.
He's fast. He plays
fast.
He really does.
I'm just
does.
Wondering, you know, could we – he even said he was surprised that he was taken at fifth. He didn't think he was going to get drafted. The Giants were the only guys that really reached out to him. I just kind of felt like maybe we could have gotten him at six or at seven and loaded up in other spots where at five there were some still good meat left on the bone. You know what I mean? Like I specifically was looking at the Ohio State defensive tackle that was available at five. Of course, the kid's name escapes me right now.
Yeah, but defensive
I mean, I like
tackle.
The pick. I just feel like, you know, maybe we could have waited a round or two for it. What do you guys think about that?
I don't necessarily know that they needed to go defensive tackle. I mean, if you want to put the need component and raise that a little bit higher there in the latter stages of the draft, I could understand that. But how could you make an argument with a safety, given that they desperately need some depth at safety and some competition at safety? I don't know. Did you really need a fifth-round defensive tackle to compete with the five or six guys that are going to be here already?
You drafted
Jay Bromley in the third
round. It
didn't necessarily have to be a defensive tackle. My point is we could have, you know, we keep stressing and hearing best player available. And I feel like, you know, maybe the Giants, obviously the Giants felt that he was the best player available. I just think there was a lot of other positions and other players available where we could have still gotten this kid, you know, 30 picks later or whatever the case may be at six or perhaps even at seven.
All right, let me just give you one piece of advice on that, and that is if a team has a conviction about a player in a particular round when he's coming up on the board, you got to grab him. Because if you think you can get him later on, chances are you won't. because somebody's going to ruin your parade. They're going to rain on that sunshine, and they're going to do something to take that guy, and you're going to feel like, oh, man, we had him in our hands. We should have grabbed him, and we missed him. So if they really wanted Thompson, then they did the right thing to get him. And that's the only thing I will say to you. If they had conviction, you must follow through on it.
And Mike,
strike when it's hot.
Mike, value is in the eye of the beholder at the end of the day. I mean, everybody can look at one player and value them very differently. If the Giants had Thompson high on their board, then that's how they valued him, and they feel it's a good selection at that spot. And if they felt that he's a good fit for the system, then you got to grab him as opposed to banking on the fact that, you know, maybe he'll be where we are in the seventh round, maybe he'll be an undrafted free agent. If you feel strong, using the key word that Paul always throws out there, conviction, I say you grab the guy and there should be no hesitation. And by the way, the defensive tackle you were referring to was Michael Bennett, who went in round six to the Jaguars.
Right.
Right. Which I thought was great value at the, in that round. You know, again, we don't really need defensive tackle, but when we keep hearing stress, best player available, I thought that kid was a stud, especially in
Mike,
that spot.
Not to cut you off, before we let you go, and this is also what Paul was emphasizing, let's put you in the GM seat here. You know, if you have the opportunity to draft a safety who could come in year one and start for you and make a big impact versus a defensive tackle in round five who's probably going to be maybe fourth or fifth on the depth chart, if you put it in that perspective, aside from best player available, who are you taking?
Oh, obviously the safety. Now
there you go. I mean, I think you need to at least look at it from that perspective
Well, I also think when you look at how the Giants have clearly decided that they were going to upgrade special teams this past offseason as well, it's obvious that Thompson's going to be a special teams demon. And you know a defensive tackle in the fifth round is not going to give you anything on specials.
And, Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513, that being the telephone number. Frank is in Tampa. Frank, what's happening?
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Lance. I think yesterday I tuned in a little bit late, I know you gave Charlie an opportunity to answer a bit of criticism, I guess, that I was the victim of as well. And when I think a gentleman called in and said that I was negative, et cetera. And so if you would just humor me for a moment, you know, I sat through over a decade of some of the worst football anyone's ever had to endure at Yankee Stadium and Yale Bowl back in the 70s. I think I've earned my bona fides, and I think I've earned the opportunity to criticize when I see bad football. I know what it looks like because I sat through it for eight games a year for 10 years, and it was hard to stomach. You know, it took a plane flying over the ballpark, you know, with a sign to get things to turn around. And I don't want to find us, you know, after this year, end up another half decade, you know.
Well, Frank, you don't have to defend yourself. See, you and Charlie, you know, you should be honored. You bring out some of the best tweets on our program because you get them so irritated and worked up. I mean, that's an accomplishment. That deserves some pats on the back.
See, the beauty of this whole thing, Frank.
If I were just to call in and say, you know, everything stinks, it'd be one thing. But Charlie as well, you know, he backs it up with facts. And that's why, you know, I'd like to hold your feet to the fire here for a second as well, Lance, because, you know, something that raised the hackles on my back of my neck just a little while ago when you said that the Giants are known for picking up gems in the latter rounds, okay? You got to humor me for about 40 seconds here, okay? Since 2009, okay, to 2013, I'm going to run through the names of the last four players taken: Andre Brown, Rhett Bomar, DeAndre Wright, Stoney Woodson, Dillard, Petras, Tracy, Matt Dodge, Greg Jones, Sash, Darrell Scott, Adrian Robinson, Mosley, McCants, Kuhn, Nassib, Cooper Taylor, Herman, and Cox. Out of those 24 players, we have three that are left on the team. The only one that has seen any playing time whatsoever has been Kuhn. So out of 24 players, we have one player who gets in the ball game once in a while. If you stop me when you find any gems, unless we're talking about pyrite, which is fool's gold, I do not see any gems.
Well, wait, did you say 2000 to 2013 was the time period you were talking about?
No, 09 to 13. 24 players in the last four picks.
Okay, well
in each round.
And in fairness, Frank, you know, to me, it's a little unfair to start breaking down the 2013 draft class when the sample size is extremely small. Personally,
no,
when
what
it
I'm
comes
saying
to
is
breaking
through
down
12,
draft classes,
through 12, that's those are the players through 12. And then, and you're right. And then for the last four, I'm saying we got Nassib, Taylor, Herman, and Cox. But two of them are gone. Nassib's a backup quarterback, so the only one that can possibly make an impact is Cooper Taylor, who hasn't done it so far. So that's what I'm saying.
Well,
out of that,
but,
from 09.
Getting back to your point, Frank, and I understand the point you're making, but you're also looking at a very small period of time. I was making a generalization. I wasn't necessarily classifying it in a certain amount of years, but I think based on most franchises, they have had a number of late-round picks and undrafted free agents as well, which is what we were talking about at that point in the conversation, who have made the roster and have made an impact. Now, how you define impact could be very different between the both of us. I'm not saying that we're looking for starters and guys that are going on to be Pro Bowlers. I'm talking about contributions to the current season or
right,
to a
season
down
the road. There's
only
three players on the team left on the team since 09.
Well, but once again, you're looking at only 09 to 12. I'm talking
right.
A little bit further beyond.
You see, I'm going to jump in and defend you and blow him out of the water.
I mean,
because the average
fine.
Span of an yeah. NFL player is only 3.5 years. So to talk about anybody who's not on the team since 2009, count 3.5 years. According to the NFL average, they shouldn't be on the team now anyway.
Right,
so,
and I'm going to blow
so,
you out of the water, Paul, because what I'm about to say is
you
that
and
your
by the
team
way, Jaquan
built,
Williams,
team,
by the way, was
team,
a starting
right.
linebacker on this team in a Super
right,
Bowl.
And your team, right, and the players that are
I mean,
that
come on.
Should now be staffing your team should be from the 09 or 10 forward, okay? Since 09,
right
wait, okay, are you guys sitting down?
No, not right
from
now.
From 09
whoa.
Till
whoa.
09
John, he's done. He's gone. If you're going to go by the NFL average lifespan of a player of 3.5 years, you talk about this is 2015. You're talking about the core of guys who you're building around now. Then that basically means you have to have a plethora of players that you've accumulated since maybe 2012. 2009, 2010, 2011, you could talk all you want about players who are here or who are not here, but that should not necessarily be the core of your team right now, okay? Because according to the NFL average, those guys should be gone.
Because of the turnover that you have on an NFL roster.
Exactly, especially when you consider that in free agency, guys are gone after 4 years, and a lot of them are jumping ship because they're free agents. That's what the CBA does. Again, you know, I love the old school guys because I'm old school, but if they can't update their frame of reference and they can't update the reality of how the game is played today in 2015, they get lost in a time capsule somewhere, and that's his problem.
Well, to use what Frank was talking about, I'd love to see a statistic because I think it's unfair to just look at this within the realm of the Giants. I think you need to look at it for all NFL teams. The percentage of players, Paul, that get drafted in, let's say, rounds 5, 6, and 7 that actually make the roster and perhaps how long of a career they wind up happening. I'm talking about for the league.
Right.
I'm not talking about the Giants because if you looked at how many guys that the Giants have drafted that have hung around and made the roster, I'd like to see what that is in comparison to the rest of the league. And I would probably say it's probably on board with the average. You know, not many players who are taken in those rounds, Paul, wind up hanging around to begin with.
I won't even say that because I don't know what the numbers are. And
I
don't want to
yeah.
go out on a limb and say something that we don't know.
Of course.
But the stuff that we do know just knocks his argument right into the water. I mean, it just blows it right out of perspective. Here's the thing, you know, and I appreciate the fact that everybody wants everything to be perfect every year, and you'd like to live in a bubble, and you'd like to live in a fantasy world. You'd like it to be fantasy football. You'd like it to be Madden or Xbox, and you can do whatever you want in a bubble and not worry about the reality of the way the league works. But if you understand the way the NFL works business-wise, you know exactly what the score is and how difficult it is to build a winner. And that's why, to be perfectly honest with you, when you take a look at this Giants franchise from the day that George Young stepped into his role as GM in 1979, it is very easy to see that the Giants are one of the top 5 teams in the National Football League. over the course of that span of time through George Young, Ernie Accorsi, and Jerry Reese. Now, if you want to sit here and you want to equate the last 2 years of non-playoff seasons to what happened in the late 60s and the early 70s, and, you know, you want to sit at the kitchen table and talk about that misery, that's your prerogative. You could do that all you like. But what I'm telling you is, based on the way the NFL is structured today, the philosophies and things that you tried to put forward just don't hold any water. Your bridge has got a lot of holes in it, and you're falling in the river.
All right, let's hope some of our future callers won't be falling in the river as we close out the
program. It's our job
here.
To dry them off.
Here we go. Gil is in Woodbridge. Gil, welcome to the program. What do you have?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Gil.
Good. I was wondering about the tight end they drafted from UConn. Receiver.
The wide receiver, yeah.
Yeah, do you think they're trying to move him over to tight end? Because he seems to catch everything. He just has speed problems.
No, my understanding is that Davis is going to be a wide receiver. I love the fact we talked about this earlier. Special teams is an emphasis right now for this team. And he says he wants to play gunner. And, okay, I'm going to fess up again. I told you I saw some cut-ups on these latter three guys. The cut-ups on Davis, he's got the body of Sean Williams, okay? He looks like a strong safety. He's cut out of granite. He does appear to be a step slow, which is why he lasts till the sixth round. Good hands, tremendous physique, tough, physical, goes over the middle. Again, special teams. I can see him playing gunner for them. He wants to. He's going to compete for the back end of the wide receiver depth chart with a guy like Corey Washington, who, by the way, as Tom Coughlin said, didn't give him enough on special teams to get a jersey every Sunday. Well, now Corey Washington's going to have to learn in his second NFL season. If he wants to beat out Jeremy Davis for a spot on the roster, he's going to have to bring some of those intangibles, because this guy will bring those intangibles.
And what really jumped out to me, Gil, to emphasize what Paul's talking about, during a conference call with reporters, Jeremy Davis was asked about what jumps out to him about his game. He said blocking. When you hear a wide receiver emphasize the fact that, forget about catching the football, the guy prides himself in blocking, that's the type of player you want here, especially who's on the back end.
He seems to be a kind of guy who would fit into the David Tyree mode of what Tyree did when he was here. Special teams guy, gunner, back into the depth chart, a tough player, good hands, not afraid to go over the middle, et cetera, et cetera. I know Tyree had a lot of drops the week of the Super Bowl and everything else. I understand all of that. But he's a bigger, stronger, more physical version of David Tyree.
Okay. And my other point was that I think we should bring in safety.
No, they just brought in two.
Safety. Yeah, but they're rookies.
So you want to see a veteran you're talking about. A veteran safety.
Yeah, bring in veteran safety.
And that could very well happen, Gil. And appreciate the phone call. Want to try to squeeze in a few more calls. We've got a lot of time between now and the start of training camp. It would not surprise me if they went after a veteran safety just to, you know, bring in some additional competition and have somebody who has a little more experience. Keep in mind, though, Josh Gordy, who was brought in too, is at least a veteran based on everybody else that's on this roster. You know, he at least fits that mold based on that definition.
Yeah, fifth-year pro, formerly with the Colts. Again, another guy who's going to try to compete for snaps. But I'm telling you right now, experience or not, and I know Tom Coughlin prefers experience, it's going to be earned out on the field. And if the young kids, the Bennett Jacksons of the world coming back off a knee surgery, if he proves he deserves a spot on the roster, he'll make it.
Shockey Brown, another one who played corner last season, who may get some looks at safety during the duration of OTAs and so forth. Ron is in Georgia. Ron, what's happening?
Hello?
Yeah, we hear you, Ron. What's happening?
Hey,
Ron, what are you,
at
the airport, Ron, or something? I mean, my goodness, you sound like a lot of activities happening in the background. Are we interrupting
anything?
Yeah,
with a work truck.
Oh, okay. I
got
gotcha.
These fans thinking that you're going to get seven starters out the draft are kind of ridiculous. My next point is about Flowers. If anybody got any bad things to say about him, just ask Dante Fowler what he did to him in that Miami, Florida game.
Yeah, he took care of him pretty good.
And then with Thompson, I'm cool with the pick. I like Camos a little bit better from Penn State. A little more speed.
Understood.
And then last thing I'll take off the air, 11-12 wins, I got to see, look at that schedule, because I think we're going to run through the NFC South. We're going to take two for the Eagles, because I don't know what they're doing. Take two for the Redskins and split against the Cowboys. What do y'all think? I'll take that out there.
All right, Ron. Appreciate the phone call.
I think Coach Coughlin would smile at that prediction. you know, bottom line is, as we've discussed the schedule before, the Giants don't have any gauntlets, any of those nasty months where they just have to absolutely beat themselves to a pulp to survive on this year's schedule. And that certainly makes it a little bit more conducive to winning.
Well, Paul, I would agree with you, but I hesitate making those type of statements just because, I mean, we really don't know how these teams are going to look, especially when you try to break down the latter half of the schedule.
On paper, okay, on the face of it, at this point, it doesn't look like there were gauntlets there. But again, you're right. You never can tell.
And the other thing, the caller threw out the fact that, you know, the Giants had cruised through the NFC South. And granted, that very well could happen. But, you know, let's remember, the NFC South had a down year last year. Everybody was below 500. In the NFL, there is a great deal of turnover from year to year.
Churn, as they call it.
Yes. It would surprise me if they had another down year. Plus, the Saints are emphasizing defense this offseason, especially with the moves they did in the draft. You know, Tampa's going to have a rookie quarterback, so you can understand perhaps some ups and downs. Carolina, you know, the Panthers seem to be the type of team, Paul, and I was talking to John about this off the air. You count them out, and then later in the season, they come out of nowhere, and they put together a run. So you always need to be somewhat cautious of a team like that.
I'll say this. Given the state of affairs of Dallas, Atlanta, Washington, and Buffalo, and even San Francisco to a degree, the Giants in those first five games, they need, if they're going to make a really good season for themselves, they need to make some hay right there. I mean, that's an opening five stretch where I got to believe the Giants think they've got a good chance to put themselves in good position for the rest of the season. You don't want to be behind the eight ball at that point, because if you are, you're missing an opportunity to make some hay against some teams that are in flux that have a lot more questions than you do.
Well, the other thing that I'll point out, speaking of fast starts, Paul, I mean, think about how top-heavy the divisional schedule is. The importance of winning these early games is not so much about putting yourself beyond the eight ball, as you said, but I think it's important because, you know, these are the tiebreaker elements that could come back to haunt you. You have Dallas twice in the span of the first 7 weeks of the season. You also have a game against Washington, Philadelphia. You only have two divisional games in the last nine. You have to take care of business early.
Talk to John about that, too. And unlike previous years where a lot of the divisional games seemed to be in the latter stages of the schedule, that always gave you some hope because you said, well, you know, if you struggled a little bit early in the middle of the season, well, there's a lot of divisional games left. You can make up those games by winning your divisional games in November and December. Not the case now. This year, there's more pressure on the early part of the schedule for the Giants to make sure they get things done then.
Let's close out with a tweet or two before we wrap up the program. And certainly appreciate all the calls, all the tweets. Giants fans, you guys and gals.
Almost
bring
all the calls.
Every time. Yes, well, we'll leave the drama.
Only kidding.
Well, you basically brought up a lot of chatter on Twitter there with the quick dismissal of Frank. Let's head back to Twitter here on subjects not necessarily related to the phone calls. T-Y-G-R-Y-T, that is his Twitter handle. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that. How do you think the offensive line is going to look this year? Who will make the biggest impact on the offensive line? Well, you and I were talking about perhaps the alignment. If we were to go in, let's say week one was this coming weekend, what the offensive line would look like. You're under the assumption Flowers, you're penciling him in as right tackle.
Right.
Beattie's left tackle.
Right.
Richburg is center.
Yeah.
Then it becomes, you're going to move Pugh to guard,
left,
and then Schwartz is going to be your right guard.
Right.
Because he says he's more comfortable on the right
and
side.
And he played right guard effectively with the Chiefs
Kansas
for
City.
Half a season.
Correct. So I would agree with you. I think that's the alignment to the offensive line. Then the second half of the question, so who do you think is going to make the biggest impact on the offensive line this coming season?
I mean, there's no such thing as an individual impact. An offensive line works in cohesion. They work in unison with one another. If any one of the five does a bad job, the offensive line's not doing a good job. I mean, that's just the way it is.
You need everybody to be in sync.
You can't separate them.
If I had to highlight one individual, though, and I agree with you, it's very difficult to pin one guy out of the hole. I'd pick Schwartz, and here's why. I think what he'll bring to the table in terms of stability and comfort could take this offensive line to a whole other level if he could stay healthy. So I could say that Schwartz, right now, and it's early, you know, the easy selection I think would be Flowers. Flowers is the first round pick. Of course, he's going to make an impact. I'm going to go a little bit out of the box. I'm going to say Schwartz, if you put him back in his comfort zone, he stays healthy. Remember, that's what they envisioned last season. That could be the guy that could ultimately be an X factor.
I would only say this, because Richburg is calling signals as the center with Eli, he definitely has to be on. Now, whether or not you want to, you know, term that having the best impact or most impact, I don't know if that's the right nomenclature to use, but I'll tell you what, he better be right. His line calls had better be right, and that's what he is. He's a natural center. So I'm going to anticipate that they will be. He shows a very high football acumen. So if Richburg is not doing well, it'll show up in a hurry. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, the center does set the tone. And hopefully him now going back to his normal spot, which he had in Colorado State, the fact that Eli and him will have the offseason to get on the same page will certainly help the Giants in the long run. All right, so that's going to wrap up things for us here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Number of calls, number of tweets. Paul and I will be back with you the rest of the week, Thursday and Friday. We'll continue to break down a number of the storylines with respect to the Giants, and we'll get you set for minicamp. There is no official release at this point of who's taking part in minicamp. So, you know, anything that you read online is pure speculation at this point. Until the Giants release who is going to take part in minicamp, there is no official word, just to at least clarify from the Giants' point of view.
Exactly.
With that being said, for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow.
See
enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What do we get?